Hey everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Sunshine Boys podcast with the Sunshine Boys themselves, Ira Kaufman, Joe Henderson, joining us from Boston, Tim Williams. I'm your host, Jim Williams. And last night in beautiful Miami, a not quite sellout crowd watched a very entertaining all-star game. Entertaining in so much as the pitchers dominated, but it was fun. And guys, surprised at all that they didn't get a sellout last night in Miami? Ira, Joe?
Well, Joe knows that the Florida market, as is evidenced by what goes on in St. Pete most of the year, it's such a fickle market. Jim, along those lines, I guess Manfred had a news conference maybe on Monday, and of course talked about expansion and said, you know, hey, we got to get this Oakland and St. Petersburg situation straightened out. God knows he could have thrown Miami in the mix, except for the fact they got a beautiful new stadium.
Right.
But his patience with St. Petersburg is off the charts. I know he likes Stu Sternberg, but friendship only goes so far, gentlemen. This is a business. And when the Yankees and Tim's beloved Red Sox don't come to town, there's 11,000 people in the building. Nothing's going on. No movement going on. And look at the Marlins. I mean, they're an okay team. They're not elite. Far from it. But they don't draw well, guys. They just don't draw well. And what happened to the new stadium bounce? Where is it in Miami? So, no, I'm not shocked. You know, they love their Giancarlo Stantons. But as far as attracting the casual sports fan, Joe, you know the Miami market well. That's a hard road right there.
Well, yeah. I mean, Miami is and always has been a fickle sports market. It's a front-running sports market. It's probably not built for a day-to-day sport like Major League Baseball, even though that there are obviously people down there who love the sport. Witness the World Baseball Classic that was played in Miami partly in March. Game sold out. Major League Baseball All-Star Game comes. It doesn't sell out. The scalper market, there was a report that tickets were going for 48% below value as scalpers were just trying to get rid of these things. You could walk up to the ticket booth yesterday and get a ticket to the All-Star game. So I'm going to disagree with you on one thing, Ira. I do think if that game had been played in Tampa Bay, that it would have sold out easily. I don't think there's any problem about that. And you mentioned that you didn't think anything was going on the stadium front. I'm going to disagree with you on that, too. I'm not pretending I have any inside knowledge on this, but what I will say is that you don't see the kind of public stance that the commissioner's taking, saying, you know, Tampa Bay is a good market. They have faith in it. They're going to get the stadium thing worked out, unless they know and have received assurances from pretty high level sources in the market that, yeah, something is going on. And the fact that it hasn't been in the news doesn't mean that it's not happening. And I would not be surprised to hear something definitive on the stadium, at least as far as the Rays picking a location. I think that could be coming sooner than you think.
Now, you've been saying that for 5 years, Henderson.
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. Not even a little bit. Obviously, there's a couple of plans out there, and one of them I think is colossally dumb, and that would be the one that the people of St. Petersburg are putting forth to try to build a new stadium next to the current Tropicana Field. I got news for you, folks. It ain't the stadium that is the problem. Yeah, it's a crappy stadium, and you know, I hope that I'm the one who can push the plunger on the dynamite, but people don't go to games because of the stadium. You know, you mentioned the new stadium bounce in Miami, Ira, which lasted like 7 minutes, I think. And that's because of the location of the stadium. How many times do we have to say it? It has to be in the center of the marketplace. And as much as the people of St. Pete don't like to hear it here in Tampa Bay, the center of the market is in Tampa and Hillsborough County. Say it after me. It's in Tampa. So it's got to happen as close to the center of the market for the Rays to have a chance to be successful. And I'll close this rant on this point. People doubt location matters. They say, well, you know, the people from Tampa ought to come on over to St. Pete to watch the games. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning hockey team in downtown Tampa has a higher average attendance in Florida than the Tampa Bay Rays do. So the Lightning sell out the building at Amalie Arena. And if you put the stadium where it belongs, the center, where people can get to it, you will see a significant spike in Rays attendance. I will take that to my grave.
Well, hopefully that'll be a long time from now.
Hopefully. And hopefully they'll have the stadium resolved by then, too. But it just seems so simple. It's so logical. I can't imagine why it should be taking this long to get this done. But it has.
It really is amazing because you hear it outside of with all the people that don't know much about the Tampa Bay area geographically. You do hear a lot of, well, this just proves Tampa Bay can't support baseball. And I try and tell people all the time, Tampa Bay as a market has never really had a full proper chance to support a Major League Baseball team because the population center is Tampa. And that's coming from a St. Pete native. I love St. Pete. But that doesn't mean it can support a baseball stadium. There just aren't enough people that can get there, especially on a weeknight. And being in St. Pete, of course, basically eliminates the possibility from people coming over from Orlando to watch a game. Whereas in Tampa, you get a few of those people, and the Lightning draw a few of them, and the Bucks have always drawn a few of them, as the Magic draw some fans from the Tampa area occasionally. They need to move to Tampa, and until they do that, I don't think Tampa Bay as a market's really had a chance to support a Major League Baseball team the way that most other markets have.
Ira, last quick thing. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just speaking. That was me.
Go ahead.
Sitting over here. I'm about to renew my rant.
Okay.
Tim, you just made the commissioner's argument for Tampa having a chance to solve this stadium dilemma. You just hit it on the head. You know, the market, this from the get-go, with the all the way back to the Devil Rays, you know, this thing was mismanaged. There was just the expectation that all they had to do was open the doors and people would come flocking in. Well, if you live down here, you understand that on a weeknight, to go to a game in St. Petersburg, if you live in Tampa or either the eastern or the northern suburbs, requires a major commitment of time. And in this era of high-def television and, you know, man caves and all that good stuff, people are just saying, I'll catch them on the weekend unless I'm going to the beach. And so TV ratings actually are in about the middle of the pack for baseball. I think the last time I checked, the Rays ranked 14th, which is not overwhelming, but still not bad. It's about where the market is nationally. And back on Miami for a second, TV ratings there are pretty much at the bottom of MLB because people just have tuned out on them. So I think in the long, long term, the Tampa Bay market is going to be okay, and Miami is what it is.
Ira, just to make your point on the bounce, the stadium opened in 2012. They, as we said, a sellout there is a little north of 38,000 for the stadium. And they averaged 27,000, which isn't even 90% capacity, which is kind of odd. The following year, they dropped down to 21,000. So I don't know that there ever was a bounce.
No, Jim, one more point I want to make, and I'd like to hear our other guys weigh in on this. But one thing that struck me last night, I grew up in the 60s, mm-hmm. and I don't want to sound chauvinistic here, but I'm going to stick with it. Major League Baseball in the 60s was fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The stars, the Mays, Aaron Clemente outfield, Frank Robinson can't even get in the start in the All-Star game when he was in the National League because these three guys are ahead of him. The pitching, of course, Koufax, Marichal, Gibson, mm-hmm. Drysdale. That's my time. And what struck me last night when they had that nice special function for the Latin players,
mm-hmm.
And, of course, my man Marichal was out there, center stage.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, if you remember, and Tim's too young, but in the 60s, the National League owned the All-Star game, owned it.
Yeah.
Just beat the AL to a pulp. They had better players. They had Latin players. They mm-hmm. had black players.
Mm-hmm.
They had better players. It was embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
And as the years have gone on, that has evened out. Looks like the American League might have the upper hand now, mm-hmm. maybe in the last 5 or 10 years. But seeing those Latin players out there, the Tony Perez's, the
right.
Marichal's, Clemente, of course, mm-hmm. reminds me of a time when there was a tremendous imbalance, I thought, between the two leagues. Those days seem to be gone. I think that's a good thing.
Joe's Tony Perez was there as well.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. And I always date the demise of the Big Red Machine to the day they traded Dick Wagner, traded Tony Perez for Woody Fryman. But
the proverbial ham sandwich.
But
Joe, what do you think? What'd you think of baseball in the 60s with the stars there?
Well, it was. I agree with the points you made, Ira, and I'll add one more. The average baseball game took about 2 hours to play then. There wasn't all of the drawn out at bats and things like that that you see today. Hitters came in, got in the batter's box, pitcher got the ball through it. It was a crisp game. World Series games, you can look it up on baseballreference.com. Look at the box scores of the World Series games back in then. Hour 58 minutes, 2 hours, 2 minutes, things like that. So, yeah, we could afford to catch a ball game because it wasn't an all-day investment of time. And now, you know, when the Yankees and Red Sox, man, you better pack a lunch for that bad boy because you're going to be there for a while. And I think it was Joe West who umpired behind home plate last night, who several years ago, much to the chagrin of Joe Torre and the Yankees and the Red Sox, and even Joe Madden got upset by it, was complaining about how long it took for those two teams to play a game. And, you know, all the purists reacted with horror, but doggone it, he was right. Speed it up. You know?
No, and part of that was that they weren't running out 6 and 7 relief pitchers, Jim, back then, because the starter
mm-hmm.
was going 8 innings or you know, a complete game was not a rarity back
right.
then, Jim. No question about it.
Sure.
Yeah, there were for all intents and purposes, there are entire positions in the bullpen that didn't exist then that exist now. The left-handed one-out guy, for example, and all the situational relievers. Really, the closer was just becoming a thing about that time. So it's really, you can really cut a lot of time out of the game by getting people to throw pitches quicker, getting people to not take timeouts in the batter's box as often as they do. But there's a limit because of these new positions, because from about the 7th inning on, games are just going to slow down, and it's hard to say you can limit the amount of relief pitchers in a game because that takes away some valid strategies. But you're right, people are starting to get tired of how long baseball games are going, and that just makes it a real tricky situation for the sport because there are some factors that they really can't get rid of now that have made games longer as well as some things they can, and that will be incremental, like these intentional walks that save maybe 17 seconds per game,
right,
cutting out the intentional walk. And that's the kind of battle that Rob Manfred has to fight now, is these games are too long, but there are only so many things you can do to make them shorter, and they're usually incremental.
I've got a suggestion for how you could make it, in my opinion, significantly shorter within the parameters that you're talking about, Tim. Why is it that every time you bring in a relief pitcher, that they take this full complement of warm-up pitches out there on the mound while everybody else is standing around with their hands on their hips? And I know everybody's going to say, well, they got to get used to the mound and blah, blah, blah. I know all that argument. But here's the thing. If you bring a player in basketball, does he get to take a few practice jump shots before he before he plays? No, it's get in there, let's go. If your quarterback gets hurt, do you bring in his replacement and say, well, let him throw five or six passes out there to Mike Evans to get warmed up? No, game on, let's go. And if you brought these guys in, they're already warmed up, they're ready to go. If you insist on giving them warm-up tosses, limit it to three, you know, and let's see what we got at that point. If you were to do that, I bet you could trim several minutes off a game when they're doing all of these pitching changes that they do. And that, you know, that'll go nowhere because, again, that's one of those things where the purists will look at me and go, oh, you're talking sacrilege here. But I'm right.
Not,
hey Jim, one
right,
other thing,
Joe.
Jim, one other thing that struck me last night, besides you know, that nice segment on the Latin ball players and their role,
right,
in Major League Baseball, is Jim, when they announced the NL team, not just the starters but the whole team. What struck me was two guys that weren't there: Anthony Rizzo, and more importantly,
right,
Chris Bryant. Now, maybe history is going to prove me wrong, but I said on this show last year, and I'm sticking to it, that I think Chris Bryant is going to be fantastic, absolutely fantastic. But he wasn't in Miami last night, and he hasn't, you know, improved off his 2016 season. I'm stunned that Chris Bryant is not an All-Star. To me, he's got the look of a 14-time All-Star. And I guess that's part of the problem in Chicago. And I got to tell you, Cub fans are getting very antsy, Jim. Even in that NL Central, if they're in either of the two other divisions, they're buried. But when are the Cubs going to get their act together?
I don't know, but I did see them when they were in Washington. And both Arrieta and Lester, they couldn't throw a strike if their life depended on it.
Well, I'm going to make as Ira Kaufman would say, a bold and brash statement. I don't think they are going to get their act together. How's that? I don't think right now that they will beat out Milwaukee for that division title. Now, that division is terrible. Let's just say it. But I think they're going to have, if they get in, they're going to have to get in as a wild card, and I don't think it's going to happen. You know, and Ira, you were down here. You remember, everybody talks about the Tampa Bay Rays and Joe Maddon in 2008. If you remember, 2009 didn't go so good. And when everybody was picking, you know, the Rays were the chic choice before the season started to win the World Series. Oh, they got all this great young talent, blah, blah, blah. And the past was prologue. The Rays never got out of their own way. They finished well out of the race, and I see the same thing happening with the Cubs.
Speaking
and
of the
next
Rays,
next year they'll come back and win 100 games.
Go ahead, Tim.
Speaking of the Rays, Tim, are you surprised that you know, Boston was playing pretty well going into the trop, and they got dusted off a little bit?
The Rays are a good team. They have 1-5. They don't have the top starter in the division, obviously. They're struggling at the top of the... Although Chris Archer has been fantastic, they have the most consistent rotation in that division. the Red Sox have a good top of the rotation, but then you get to their 4 and 5. They've been starting Drew Smyly the last couple of weeks at the end of their rotation, because until Eduardo Rodriguez gets healthy, and who knows what he'll be when he comes back, they need someone at the back end of their rotation. Well, the Rays don't. They actually have a pretty solid, predictable pitching rotation, and I think to tie it back to the Cubs a little bit, I think that's really the common theme here, is can you trust your starting pitchers? Chicago right now can't. Tampa Bay can. So I think they're going to stick around in that AL East race this year. I don't think they're going away, and certainly they can mash the ball, and it doesn't take much to get a lead for some decent starters. So they're in great position. I really think that they're going to be around all the way through the end of September.
I completely
agree. Does
that
mean Alex Cobb is off the trade block?
I think he has to be off the trade block. I don't think there's any way, unless the Rays come out of the break and lose like 15 in a row, I don't think there's any way that they could sell the notion of trading Alex Cobb right now. And nor should they. I mean, in fact, what they ought to do, everybody assumes that they won't, but Alex will be a free agent this winter. Mm-hmm. I'd make a pitch to sign him. You know, I mean, I know they have some good talent down in AAA and blah, blah, blah. But this guy is just a beast and consistent. He's great in the clubhouse. You keep guys like that around. And so, no, I don't think Alex Cobb's going anywhere, at least at the trade deadline. And I agree with Tim. I think the Rays are in this thing to stay.
I'll tell you guys, in that division, I've been somewhat disappointed with the lack of consistency with both the Toronto Blue Jays and the Orioles. The Orioles can't get out of their way from a starting pitching standpoint. And my God, you know, to go to the bullpen, you're asking to lose a game.
Yeah, I'm looking at Toronto and thinking there might be regime change there, because they're a big disappointment right now, and that has the look of a team that is going to have a serious day of reckoning, before next season. And sometimes you got to tear it down to build it back up, and I can see that happening in Toronto for sure.
And Joe, to go to Tim's point, neither of those teams, Jim, have a solid staff. I mean, five guys that are going to keep you in a game and go six innings and give up two runs consistently. They don't have it. Toronto doesn't have it. Baltimore's pitching, you know, obviously, Jim, big disappointment.
It's a mess.
They can still mash the ball, but it's a mess.
Yeah, but I was kind of surprised. I mean, you didn't see Manny Machado at the All-Star game last night. Scope, you know, came through and scored one run in, to tie the game. I mean, to take the lead. It's just, I think the surprise to me is the Central division, where you've got Kansas City getting back into it. You got Minnesota, you got Cleveland, you got some scrappy teams in that Central division of the American League.
You know, that's a great point, Jim. Look at Kansas City, Joe. A month ago, they looked like a sure bet to be sellers at the trade deadline. And they've got some nice pieces that teams would be interested in, no question about it. But, Joe, looking at the standings, you know, unless something changes in the next 10 days, you can't have a sell-off in Kansas City. What would you be telling your fans at that point?
Well, the Royals do start the second half on a 3-game losing streak, so they have cooled off a little bit. But, the Royals have done a great job clawing back into the race. And you mentioned the trade deadline, Ira, and I think all of us will agree on this. We can't make any judgments on what teams will or won't look like in September, at least not definitive ones, until we get past the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. Because, will the Cubs – now, the Cubs don't have a whole lot in their minor league system to trade right now to get the kind of pitching that they need. So I don't know. They may be stuck with with the staff that they've got. But what does Boston do? Do they? You mentioned the back end of the rotation. There are going to be serviceable guys that are available, and you know, all it takes is, as we all know, is the right deadline deal, and you can catch fire and go ahead and work your way into the playoffs in September. So, you know, I would say let's just hold off until we get past the deadline, and then we'll know for sure what's what. Your Washington Nationals, Jim.
Yeah.
They have got to get a closer. They have
no,
to do it.
No, believe me, I'm fully aware of that at this point.
Thank you, Captain Obvious. Yes.
Yeah, but as FP Santangelo goes, yes, that's coming from the guy wearing the makeup and the tie. I think, you know, and you guys know this as well as I do. You're listening, of course, to the Sunshine Boys with Ira Kaufman, Joe Henderson, Tim Williams, and I'm Jim Williams. It really is going to – if you've got pitchers, right, mm-hmm. there are going to be some guys. I bet you there's – I've heard Hugh Darvish. I've heard – you know, we know Hellickson. We know four or five guys that are big-name guys that could help a lot. But – it really boils down to, are you going to be able to eat that contract? And that's what, you know, that's going to be the difference between who can, you know, who can add that starting pitching. And, it, you know, obviously relief pitching as well. But the starting pitching, I also heard Sonny Gray, who I think is would be a steal for somebody out of Oakland. But, you know, and he's manageable too. I mean, he's got a manageable thing. That's going to be a lot of, that's where you're going to have to part with pieces because Billy Bean doesn't have the big contract. Go ahead.
Jim, it pains me, Jim, to say it. But not only wouldn't I be surprised, I think it's a likelihood that one of the guys that's going to be available and mm-hmm. snatch stop is Henderson's old reliable. Johnny Cueto. The Giants are buried. They're going nowhere. Mm-hmm. Cueto's got an opt-out on his contract after this season. He's already stated he wants to go to the American League. I don't know why, but he does. And, Tim, I think the Red Sox could find the spot at the back end of their rotation for Johnny Cueto. He's got postseason experience. I don't think he's going to be a Giant come August, and I think where he goes, he could be a difference maker. He could be.
It's funny you bring up Boston in relation to Johnny Cueto. When he was a free agent a couple of years ago, and they signed David Price instead of Cueto, it was a bit surprising because after that season where he had come off the World Series in Kansas City, Johnny Cueto couldn't stop talking about how he idolized Pedro Martinez and couldn't wait to work with him. And that led people to believe maybe he wanted to come to Boston since Pedro Martinez works for the Red Sox these days. If that's a possibility again, he would be thrilled to come to Boston. And given all the stuff that has been said in this town about David Price this year and how he's not fit for the city, which I'm not sure that's really true. But if that's the case, then Johnny Cueto becomes a very attractive option. But I really don't know if the Red Sox will be looking for starting pitching because I think they can get a lot of their problems solved, or at least they have to wait and see what Eduardo Rodriguez has left this season. Because if he comes back from his injury and he's fine, they don't really have a lot in the way of prospects anymore. They've had Dave Dombrowski as their GM for a year and a half. That's about enough time for him to have depleted what was once one of the best farm systems in baseball. Now that's one of the best farm systems all over baseball because Yoan Moncada is now in Chicago with Michael Kopech. The Padres have Anderson Espinoza, one of the best pitching prospects from the Red Sox organization last year. And if the Royals don't stay hot, they could end up trading what's left of their farm system for Mike Moustakas. That's certainly a popular opinion around here. So I don't know if they could go get a Cueto, even though it would be a lot of salary eating and he's near an opt-out year, I think the Giants would ask for more than Dombrowski would even have to offer at this point.
You know, Ira, I know you're aware of this, but I think it bears repeating. Your Giants are 27 games out at the break. What?
There is any reason to bring that up, Henderson? Is there any real reason?
Just to get that comment from you. But the real thing about that division is you could conceivably have two teams in the NL West win 100 games this year. The Dodgers almost certainly. They got 61 already. Arizona. And I mean, and Colorado's right there too. That is a very top heavy division. You've got three teams in there that if you pointed a finger right now and said at either one of those three teams, the Dodgers, Diamondbacks, or Rockies, and said they're going to be in the World Series, I wouldn't be prepared to argue with you.
I have a quick question for you guys. Zach Greinke, fine pitcher, no question about it. Is he one of these guys that you think is in it more for the money than for the game? Because obviously, had he taken a little bit less money and stayed in Los Angeles and been, you know, like the number two to Kershaw, that would, you know, that Dodger thing might have been really amazing. But I tend to believe that he's more of a diva. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, wants to be the number one pitcher on any staff he's on, and he can't handle the fact that he's not in Los Angeles.
There's a little bit of truth to that, Jim. I do. And let's quickly point out, he was a major disappointment last season.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that Arizona fell short. Now, he's looking a lot like the Zach Greinke we remember with the Dodgers when he was number two to Kershaw, and a heck of a number two. And that's a big reason why, as Joe points out, Diamondbacks in position maybe to win 95 games this year. And, you know, Joe Buck, who I'm not a great fan of, I think it was Smoltz last night, made a great point about Goldschmidt. Nobody ever talks about this guy. Nobody. First of all, he's not a big lumbering first baseman. He's very adept with the glove. But more importantly, what a hitter. What a hitter.
Yep.
And I think if he was playing in a bigger market, you'd hear a lot more about Paul Goldschmidt.
And he steals bases, too. When was the last time you saw a first baseman that was capable of stealing a base?
Absolutely. Maybe Ortiz?
Yeah, he did a couple. you know, on Zach Greinke, I would like to point out that in 2006... he was diagnosed with a social anxiety disorder, and a lot's been made of that. And certainly, I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you much about that. But I would say that I wonder if that had anything to do with him being not wanting to stay in Los Angeles. Maybe that has something to do with it as well. It's hard. There's a lot of mind reading that goes into these things, and that's. At times it's unfortunate because there's a lot of putting words in people's mouth, but it is worth wondering what that rotation would look like in LA with him in it. And he's been so inconsistent, who knows what it would look like with him in it as well, because we really don't know what Zach Greinke we're getting from year to year. He had an awful start to the year last year, but now he's back to his old self and it's got the Diamondbacks back in contention. That is, you know, the phrase East Coast bias gets thrown around a lot in baseball, and I think if there's one year to pay attention to the West, if you're up late and you're watching those 10 p.m. games, the NL West is the most entertaining division in baseball, and that's coming from someone who's spent my entire life following AL East teams.
Well, that's true, Tim. I think the most entertaining team in baseball is the Houston Astros. Well represented last night in Miami. Well represented. Did I hear this right, gentlemen? George Springer has 9 leadoff homers this year? Is that possible?
Yep.
That's outrageous. I mean, that's Ricky Henderson. You can't do that.
yeah, but George Springer doesn't speak of himself in the third person.
Altuve is incredible. I mean, the guy's fantastic. What a hitter. And not just a singles hitter as a second baseman. And Correa, we know, you know, could turn out to be a little mini version of Derek Jeter, you know, for the next 12 years. Not as good, but damn good. Joe, you gotta be believing in the Astros, and who knows, they might swing a deal in the next 2 weeks to solidify their chances.
Well, yeah, and everything you say about the Astros is true, but I'm going to inject a moment of pause on them.
Can you agree with me on one point today, Henderson? One?
Probably not, but. Well, I do agree with you about your Giants, but anyway, the Astros' phenomenal record, you know, on cruise control of the playoffs already, and all of that. But they play in an absolutely wretched division. They really do, and they're 16 and a half games ahead of the second place team, which also happens to be. So you have the Astros sitting there blowing the division away. The other four teams in the division are underwater. So how good do we really know the Astros are? The Dodgers, to me right now, are more impressive because they're doing it in a division with the Diamondbacks and Rockies. And can the Astros turn it on when October gets here? I don't know, but
they have a very good road record, Joe. That's got to mean something. On the road.
And here's a point for you to ponder, Ira. Yes, the Astros have a great road record. They also have 162 plus run differential. They've scored that many more runs than their opposition. You say to me, Joe, that's unbelievable. Yeah,
Joe, that's unbelievable.
Thank you. The Dodgers have 163 run differential. So, and again, against arguably tougher opposition. So, love the Astros. You know, could see them in the World Series, but there is that moment of pause that we have to consider when looking at that team.
Tim?
And to Joe's point, I don't trust a team that has no way of knowing what its flaws are. And I think the Astros are currently a team like that. They're a fantastic team. When I ranked all the teams based on entertainment, they came out number one for me as well.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Thank you.
But the issue is that really they haven't faced any adversity, and they're not going to face any adversity this year. They've already won their division. You know, the Angels could make a push for a wild card. There's no way they're going to get back in that division race. And a push for the wild card would be quite a leap, but they have Mike Trout coming back in a couple of weeks. If they can stay on the periphery when he comes back, that will be at least the most interesting team with Mike Trout on it we've ever seen, and that will be something worth watching. But that Houston really has no way of knowing what they need other than just kind of guessing based on statistics. That might be a problem when October rolls around. It certainly has happened to teams before where they've been on that cruise control for months and they have come into October without any real idea what happens. You know, as Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a game plan until they get punched in the mouth.
I understand, but let's look at the Cubs last year too, Jim. Cruise control from the All-Star break on in, mm-hmm. and you know, and didn't have a lot of playoff experience at that point.
No.
And they did just fine. So, yeah, Tim's right. I mean, teams have won 110 games and, not shown up in October. But as of now, Houston's got a heck of an entertaining team.
Well, Houston's got a fantastically entertaining team and a talented team. And I think the only part that would concern me with Houston and has, you know, as someone who did, you know, Astros games back in the 80s, I have a fond place in my heart for the team and for the city who's a very good baseball town. what concerns me about them, even though they're fantastic pitchers, is Keuchel and McCullers and their ability to pitch into October, given, you know, their lack of experience in that aspect. You know, doesn't mean they can't. They can certainly prove me wrong, but that would be my concern. My concern with the Astros would be the, you know, not getting to the playoffs. They're there already, but once they get into the playoffs and pushing forward, when you've got, you really, I mean, pitching is everything in the playoffs, and I'm concerned about Keuchel's and McCullers and how, you know, you don't learn, you can't blame them because they haven't been there. So, you know, we'll just see, have to see how that plays out. But go ahead, Joe.
Here's one other little note, since I mentioned the run differential for mm-hmm. the Dodgers and Astros. Mm-hmm. I'll credit the ESPN stats and info people with this. Those numbers represent the fourth and fifth largest differential entering the All-Star break in Major League history. And of the previous teams who exceeded that mark, everyone made it to the World Series and won mm-hmm. the World Series. So, except for the 69 Orioles. So these teams, the Dodgers and Astros, are for historic seasons. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, there is a lot to be. Of course, and so were the Seattle Mariners the year they won 116 games. And
sweet lose team. Yeah.
And didn't quite go. So, you know, it's fun to bat around, but, you know, I'll stick by my earlier statement that I want to see if the Astros can put their foot on the gas when the time comes.
All right, guys. So real quick, we'll start with you, Ryan. Who do you think in each division is going to be the team that improves themselves at the trade deadline?
All right, that's a good one, my friend. That'll be a team that really feels they have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And along those lines, I'm going to say Arizona.
Okay.
Because while they may not catch the Dodgers, because the Dodgers are having one of these incredible seasons, they have to solidify their wild card chances. They seem to be in the driver's seat, but you never know. I can see Arizona adding a pitcher. I don't want to keep throwing up Johnny Cueto's name, but hey, I'm just looking at my Giants, guys. Other than Bumgarner, mm-hmm. he's untouchable. I understand.
Yeah.
You want Samardzija? You want Cueto? Please take Matt Moore off my hands. I don't understand that guy. He's got good stuff, and he's got to be a head case, by the way, Matt Moore. He's been terrible, absolutely horrible, this season, and that's a travesty for a guy mm-hmm. that's got good stuff. Anyway, I'm going with Arizona because I think Joe says the NL West is the place to watch. I think he's right, and they need to make the playoffs this season with Greinke pitching like this. So I think the Diamondbacks make a move.
Would the Giants make a trade in the division?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Just as long as this team is giving up viable prospects.
Mm-hmm.
Tim says the Red Sox are a little short in that area. I take Tim's word for it. He knows Boston in and out. But Arizona's prospects, they got to have a couple, and the Giants need to pry one or two away from them.
What you got, Tim?
I'll tell you, if there's one team that needs to make a move or they're not going to make the playoffs, it's the New York Yankees. Look at their pitching rotation. They're getting a great year out of Luis Severino. He's also hit his career innings high already this season, and it's already the All-Star break. They're going to need either Tanaka to turn it around, and he's had a pretty miserable season, Pineda to really find another gear, or CC Sabathia turned back the clock close to 10 years. So they're going to need pitching almost as much as any contender, because it just looks like sooner or later it's going to be tough to throw Severino out there every fifth day when he hasn't pitched that many innings in his career. But they have a wealth of prospects. They, you know, Brian Cashman's come out and said they're committed to keeping those prospects, but they're the New York Yankees and they're above 500. They're in contention. It's hard for me to see them not at least kicking the tires on a starting pitcher or maybe even two, because if you look at their rotation, it just seems to pretend that they're not going to be contenders for very long in a division where the top team right now has Chris Sale, David Price, and last year's Cy Young winner, and the Rays have that consistent rotation breathing down the Yankees' neck, tied with them for second place. If New York's going to make the playoffs, they need a pitcher, and they have the resources to get it done. In fact, if there's anyone out there who could land Cueto just by making a phone call, it's probably Brian Cashman.
Joseph.
Well, I think your Washington Nationals are a team that will absolutely have to make a move to get a closer. I mean, that's not rocket science.
Right.
I look for them to be very active, trying to plug a big hole. And to go back to the AL East for a second, you mentioned the Yankees, Tim, and I agree with you on that. The Tampa Bay Rays have basically, they're not going to do anything at the trade deadline. We mentioned Alex Cobb earlier. They're not going to trade him. But the Rays have already significantly improved themselves just this month with the acquisition of Hechavarria, shortstop from the Marlins. And they've got Wilson Ramos has totally what had been a position of chronic and long-term need for the Rays at catcher into a strength. So I think the Rays are good to go.
You know, Wilson is a phenomenal guy, and I for one, am very pleased to see that he's doing well. He's a great guy. And, you know, he, you know, it's kind of funny when you get a guy like that back and he's ready to rock and roll, you know, it's like getting somebody at the trade deadline, you know?
Absolutely and, is. And the pitchers just rave about him. They love him.
Now, he's wonderful at a stat which, you know, Tim's going to help me with because I don't go through stats like this, but pitch framing. I just been watching baseball for 50 years, guys. I'm sorry. What can I tell you? Pitch framing. Okay. Evidently, Wilson is among the top five in pitch framing. So, you know, that's good for him. It's just what Wilson Ramos does is he calms pitchers down very well. He's good behind the plate. He's got a solid bat. He's always been able to hit the home runs, but he began to start to hit for average last year, and I think he's starting to embrace that. He doesn't strike out as much, although he does occasionally, you know, drive you nuts with striking out with a guy, you know, 90 feet away. But more often than not, he'll come through for you. So that was, I was very pleased to see Wilson bounce back in Tampa Bay. And Joe, you don't think, will they, they're unlikely to add anybody, I guess is what I'm asking in this regard. The Rays.
Well, I don't believe they will because in addition to the two guys I mentioned, they also got Brad Boxberger back as a bridge to the ninth inning to Alex Colomé. Now, Colomé is the human heartburn right now. He's really hit a rough patch.
He's your Maalox moment.
Yeah, he totally is. And I tweeted out the other day that people better hope Congress can solve the healthcare situation if we're going to have to watch Colomé close games the rest of the year, because you know he used to be just like automatic and now he's a real high wire act. But you know, having Boxberger back there now, that has really made a difference in that bullpen. And taking three out of four from Boston before the break was, I think, a great signal by the Rays that that they believe they're in it for the long haul.
Hey, Jim, is there any relief pitcher, Jim, any relief pitcher in particular or group of relievers that have been linked to the Nationals going forward?
Every person who isn't in first or second place, every team that isn't in first or second place, pretty much those guys have been linked. I don't think there's a relief pitcher that hasn't been linked to the Nationals, and I honestly don't think that there's a team they haven't spoken to. So, you know, will they get a guy? Yes. Will it be the guy? It better be. A guy who we all know and like, Edwin Jackson, who they picked up, is likely to get an opportunity to start because Joe Ross is injured. And that'll be interesting to see how Edwin comes back, if he's able to come back. They've even got K-Rod down in the minor leagues. He's on a contract, which, by the way, expires in 3 days. So they're either going to bring him up in 3 days, or I don't know what he's going to do. He's going to go out and rush to another team that doesn't want him, I suppose. But he's been in the minor leagues applying his trade and seeing how he can do it. So, no, they're definitely going out and doing whatever they can. Who they land, I have no idea, because literally there's so many teams out there that they've been talking to. And, you know, you guys know as well as I do, if you and I and everybody on this podcast knows the Nationals need a relief pitcher, as the old saying goes, even Stevie Wonder can see that coming. And I think that they, you know, they're going to get held up, but it doesn't matter. They're going to pay the price, whatever the price is, to get what they need to get, because that seems to be a piece of the puzzle that absolutely has to be put to bed. There isn't any question about that. Who it is, I it could be any number of 9 players that I know of, and probably 3 or 4 people that I have not even heard of.
Boy, speaking of relief pitchers, 2 guys, then obviously not going to be available. But boy, what seasons for Kimbrel. Tim has been unbelievable, and I'm not sure he's been any better than Jansen for the Dodgers. Boy, you talk about relievers having incredible seasons. I think Jansen's walked 1 guy, gentlemen, 1 man this season. Struck out about 60. And Tim, am I wrong? But has Kimbrel been fantastic?
Oh, Kimbrel's been excellent. He's had a great season. Last year, he had a very good season, but there were some questions about him in tie games and in non-save situations. But this year, he's just been fantastic in basically every appearance he's had. He throws smoke. He has an intimidating windup of sorts where he has that arm hanging out to the side like a hawk. And he's been really something for that Red Sox team. And they really have a few stars that I think have been making an impact this season. Obviously, Chris Sale's getting a lot of credit. And while he's not having the season he had last year, Mookie Betts is coming on strong. And there's a guy there's a 5-tool player. He's fun to watch. He smiles all the time. When the Red Sox win, he gets together with the other outfielders and dances in the outfield. That's the guy that, if there's a player that you haven't watched and you're hearing this name and you've only heard it a few times on SportsCenter, watch a Red Sox game and see what Mookie Betts can do. That's the guy I would be following for that team for the second half of the season. Because if he heats up, that could be a team poised to make a real deep run in the AL playoffs. And of course, when I'm talking about the AL playoffs, look out for Cleveland.
You know, Ira, back in 1971, we went to Pittsburgh to visit my grandmother. And as was the case, when we did visit, we would go to Three River Stadium, we'd check out the Pirates game, and we actually happened to be there on September 1st. They were taking on your San Francisco Giants. And on that day, it was the first day that a Major League Baseball team fielded an entire team of color. And that was because Gene Alley, who was the normal shortstop, took the day off, and Richie Hebner, who was the Pirates' starting third baseman, also took the day off. And Doc Ellis was pitching, so Rennie Stennett led off playing second base. Gene Kimes batted second. He played center field. Roberto Clemente was in right field. Willie Stargell was in left. Manny Sanguin was your catcher. Dave Cash at third. Al Oliver at first. Jackie Hernandez at shortstop and Doc Ellis on the mound. So that happened to be at that time in 1971. That was 24 years. 24 years, mind you. It took before Major League Baseball fielded an all-black Latino starting lineup after Jackie Robinson officially broke baseball's color barrier. So that was where we were in 1971 on September 1st, and it just happened to be at Three River Stadium. And oh, by the way, yes, they beat the Giants by a score of 9-5.
You know what's really interesting about that is, you know, to close the book on what you saw, which was historic, that team won the world championship.
Yep.
The 1971 Pirates did win it. And that was the Clemente show. Remember? I think it was against the Orioles. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Clemente put on a show. And hard to believe, but some people in the country, they didn't know how good Clemente was until that World Series. And he just took it over. So, Jim, you were there for a little history that day.
As Charlie Slows likes to say, remember where you are so you can remember where you were when something like this happened. So, remembering where we are, Mr. Kaufman, final thoughts and social media.
All right. You can get me on Twitter, at iKaufman76. Just a shout-out to Wimbledon for a match for the ages the other day with Muller and Nadal. You beat Nadal in a fifth set. You've done something. Nobody digs down deeper than Nadal. And what a story. This Muller guy's 34, gentlemen.
Right.
34. Kind of a journeyman. And all of a sudden, he's caught fire at an age when most guys are looking to retire. So just a nod to Wimbledon for one of those matches that you remember for quite a while.
Absolutely. Tim?
Well, on the Wimbledon point, there's an American in the semifinals. Just as we were talking, Andy Murray has been upset by Sam Querrey.
Wow.
In five sets. He moves on to the semifinals. He might play Muller. And if you look at the draw, he has a pretty strong chance to make the Wimbledon final. So it's been a long time. And when we talk about tennis, we talk about the lack of Americans a lot in men's tennis. Well, 24 seed Sam Querrey is in the semifinals. He might make it to Sunday morning. And if that's the case, you might want to watch that because it might be the last time for a while you see an American on center court on Sunday morning at Wimbledon. And as far as my final thought, I'd also like to say the tour began yesterday between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. This is absurd to me. This whole thing, I know boxing has a history of this. I know Muhammad Ali went out to Japan to fight a professional wrestler once, but that people still take this fight seriously and still say, how can Conor McGregor win? I have no way of imagining how Conor McGregor, who's never boxed professionally in his life, is going to beat the most pure defensive boxer than anyone's seen in a very long time. It's just the style doesn't set up right. It seems like it's going to be anticlimactic. And if this is what it takes to get boxing back in the mainstream, maybe it really is dying worse than the people who love boxing say it is. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Writes Sports.
Joe Henderson, time to close it up, bud.
All righty. You can find me on Twitter at JHendersonTampa. And what I'm going to be watching is the Chicago Cubs coming out of the break. They have three against Baltimore, three against Atlanta, three against St. Louis, and four against the White Sox. That's 13 games against teams that they feel they are superior to leading into a end of the month series at the trade deadline or close to it against Milwaukee. So if the Cubs are who they say they are, they're going to have to prove it real soon out of the break. And I'll leave you with one quick note. The next time the Sunshine Boys get together, my son, Ben Henderson, will be a married man. He's getting married in a couple of days to a lovely young lady, and we are thrilled for him.
Congrats.
Congratulations, Joe.
Thank you.
Well, that brings to an end yet another edition of Sunshine Boys Podcast. I'm Jim Williams, your host. You know, if you haven't subscribed to us, it's a very simple thing to do. You can do it right here at Blog Talk Radio. You can also do it at the iTunes Store, at Google Play, or at Stitcher, where there's all kinds of fantastic podcasts. So no excuse for you not to be able to subscribe to the Sunshine Boys. We can be delivered to your email address or right to your phone. So you don't have to concern yourself at all. Just click the little subscribe button and bingo, we're all taken care of. Okay? Easy enough. So do it today. Anyway, let's say goodbye for Ira Kaufman and Joe Henderson, the Sunshine Boys themselves, for Tim Williams, who joined us from Boston. And again, I'm your host, Jim Williams. Until next time, join us right here on the Sunshine Boys Podcast.